And we are live. Welcome, folks, to episode 3779. And, you know, it'll be a long time before I get this to rhyme again. Welcome to the last live of 2025. We'd have to still be going, I guess, in 2035 for that to ever happen again. It rhymed that way. That's kind of cool, isn't it? Anyway, if you're looking at me and going, Spirito Claus looks a little rough, you're not wrong. There is some kind of crud going around this year. At least they didn't try to convince us it's some deadly virus that will kill us all and lock us down in our homes again. But apparently it's pretty gnarly. And I had several people reach out to me from various, you know, inside this community, people I just know in the other part of the world. And I'll say, hey, man, I don't recommend this. Who am I to take somebody's advice, though, of course? So I came down with this probably from my my daughter-in-law, who works in a medical office every day. And I lovingly joke and call her Typhoid Tiffany. And she's like, but I'm not sick. I'm like, of course you're not sick. You're exposed all the time. You're a vector. You're a disease vector. Anyway, Spirico Claus was down for the last 5 days pretty hard. I am actually feeling a lot better today. I was very in and out on whether I'd be able to do a final episode for you guys today because my voice was absolute dog shit yesterday, right? So it's all worked out. And Spirico Claus will be fully recovered and ready to jump in his pickup truck and deliver AR parts kits, reloading equipment and ammo and MREs to all the good little boys out there that are homesteaders, and preppers, on the 25th. I can promise you. But if you like the Santa Jack look, the Spirico Claus look, enjoy it today or watch old videos, because when I come back in January, and our first day back in January is going to be, let me be accurate with this, I think it's the 5th. Because of when the new year lands, it will be, yes, the 5th of January is when we'll be back. This will be gone. Will it happen on the 1st or the 2nd? I can't tell you, but I can tell you by the 5th when I come back and go, welcome to our first show of 2026, which should be episode 3781, because we will have the Christmas special tomorrow as a normally numbered show, not as a rewind. It will be gone. It will be gone, and I'll look 10 years younger, I think. I've been asked a lot how I like this, and I don't really like it or dislike it. I just think when I look at myself, I look like I'm in my 60s. And I think I look like, when I don't look like this, if people ask me how old I am and I tell them I'm 53, they're like, wow, you look good for 53. So there is that. Anyway, he says, Second Life Farce says, I'm going to miss Hobo Santa Jack. That's another good name for it. I think I didn't really sell the Santa look, though, because I didn't grow the hair out. I didn't really realize that until I was like halfway in. I'm like, Santa usually has a pretty good head of hair going too, to kind of blend in with the beard. But I couldn't do long hair and long beard in Texas starting in the summer. That's just, I'm sorry, can't do it, kiddos. Anyway, what are we going to do today? We're going to go out with a bang. Last show of the year, we are going to today talk about living free in an unfree world. And I want to tell you kind of what led me to this subject. It's not something I haven't talked about before. I've actually pulled some of the bullet points from an older show from 2018. But I got up this morning, and I'll let you guys know this. I've been doing something to work on myself. I don't believe that there's ever a point in your life where you're successful enough to stop doing new forms of self-improvement. I've been doing some of the work on myself for about 2 months. And one of the things in that program has been I have very much limited my exposure to social media. It might look like I'm there, but I've been in a post and ghost mode. I've been in it just like drop all the things on all the platforms. Like if there was an automated tool that actually worked worth a damn, I would have been using it during this period of time. Occasionally I'd look at some things here and there. Being sick for this last week, kind of got off of it, and I'll get back onto it starting in the morning. But so because I was out of that mode, when I got up this morning later than typical, and I sat down and I opened up my laptop and poured a coffee and pet the dog on the couch, I looked at X. It was probably the worst place out of all the choices to look. And it's a clusterfuck that's so bad, it literally makes me feel like I'm back in the height of COVID stupidity, except it's not about COVID at all. And what I mean is about midsummer of 2020, I was in Florida. And on the beach, this beautiful hotel room, people everywhere. It's not spring break because it's midsummer, not spring, but it looks like spring break. I mean, everybody's having a blast, except there's no woo party because it's like an older crowd, right? It's a kind of expensive resort we stay on, so like it's chill people, but everybody's having a blast. Look, people's kids are running around playing. Well, I'm fishing, right? My wife's happy. She's getting a suntan. And I had to come up to the room to get something for my wife. And I come in. I guess she had gone through the remote control, looked at some stuff on TV, and just, like, threw it on the bed. So happened she left it on CNN, of all things. And I walk in to that room, and they're talking about how bad things are in Florida. And, like, you know, there's giant lines and people are dying and blah, blah, blah. They have to bring in you're saying that all the stupid shit they said everywhere, right? They have to bring in refrigerator cars for the hospital because there's too many dead people and all. And I'm listening to this, and it sounds like World War III, 9/11, Pearl Harbor Day, and what liberals think happened on January 6th all at the same time, plus, like, a pandemic from, like, Evil Dead or some shit, right? And at some point, I'm like, my brain hurts. Like, I've only heard this for 30 seconds, but this is too much information, and this doesn't, and I'm literally standing in the sliding glass door going out to the back to the beach. And I'm like, look, like, I feel like a comedian on stage, like Jim Garrafin or somebody like that, you know, like, I looking at the TV and looking at the beach and looking for any continuity whatsoever. And the reality is what I'm being shown and what everybody's shrieking and screaming about just isn't happening. It's not happening. That was X this morning. But it's not the news. It's not the media. It's not Fox and CNN and MSNBC. I mean, they're there too. It's what you think of as more like normal people, like influencers, but it's also like the second tier, third tier, fourth tier influencers, and they're just regular people. Everybody's freaking out on both sides about politics, about the economy, about everything. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, I bet it looked just like this for the last 2 months. But I've been focused on me, building my business, building my podcast, doing a better job for you guys, being a great grandfather, not a great grandfather, but a good, great, you know, great, best grandfather I can be. I'm not quite the great grandpa yet. I don't want to get there for a while. And everything in my life just seems freaking awesome. And if you look at this, like if some visitor from another realm came here and their window into what life's like in the United States of America, North America, and around the world today was what I saw today on X. I mean, you just think everybody's ready to kill themselves. Like people are just like sitting there with a razor up against their neck, just waiting for one more thing to just go ahead and off themselves. You think the whole world's falling apart. You think the Venezuelans are invading Florida right now and the Russians are taking over London. That's what you would think from one side, right? And then you would think the United States is out with like zero gauge, you know, like shotguns, firing grape shot like from cannons in the Civil War and killing everybody that's brown, yeah, right, and stealing money from old ladies, and hunting down anybody that's middle income and hanging them from a tree, upside down by their feet and then beating them with canes and then lighting a fire underneath them. This is the insanity that this felt like. And here's what's going on. It's the same shit it's always been. Nothing is happening today that hasn't always been happening. All it is everything's being held up in front of you to raise you to a fever pitch. Because, yeah, something's coming in the new year. Something big. Something's going to fuck shit up. Something's going to be a big opportunity and fuck shit up. Do you know I know that? There's always something coming in the new year that's going to fuck shit up. Right? They're just priming you for it. To get the most out of it. They're winding you up. I want you to think about end of year cycles. And the news cycles are now far more infiltrating in life than they used to be because they use social media and algorithms and pushing narratives and bot farms and all of it to magnify the impact. But it's like when you go to a concert, yeah, and you're there to see the main act. But they know if the main act just comes out and starts, it's kind of like, eh, the crowd's not wound up. You want the crowd wound up. You want the crowd in a good mood. You want the crowd like demanding the main act. Like they're happy. Maybe the comedian comes out first and he gets you to laugh. And then an opening band comes out, right? and they get you grooving, but then like that makes you hungry for music, and now you're like chanting Pink Floyd, or whoever, depending on how old you are, right? And then the main band comes out, and it's just, you know, they come out that first riff, and everybody, ah! And if they just came out and did that, it wouldn't work that way. Now, at least that's for your entertainment. This is for their own amusement and their gain. But it's the same thing. They do this every year. They convince you the entire world is going to explode. And then 2026 will probably be a lot like 2025. I'm sure there'll be economic opportunities that weren't there and hardships that weren't there. There'll be changes, of course. But you get what I'm saying. The whole setup is always the same. The pattern is set. And as I thought about that, I thought, well, what is my best message to leave people with for the end of 2025? And that is, paraphrasing my wife. So some of you don't know this. I'm actually a minister, and I've officiated some weddings. And I actually officiated a wedding for my son and my daughter-in-law. And in my eulogy in that, I said, to quote my wife, love is a choice. And I talked about how you will not always find it easy to love the person you're with. But if you choose love, then you get through the hard times. Let me tell you something else that's a choice. Freedom is a choice. Freedom is a choice. There are people sitting in jail cells right now that in their heart and their mind and their spirit and their soul are more free than people with jobs that are good jobs, working good jobs, that are about to have a week off for vacation. In some ways, that person in jail is more free than them because they're free in their heart, their mind, their soul, and their spirit. They have made a choice. Now, that's probably a person that's not in for life. Yeah, right? And they've already made a commitment to themselves of what they're going to do when they get out. I don't want to oversell that. But I'm just saying that, freedom is a choice. Success is a choice. Some of the greatest fortunes ever built were built in the recessions and depressions of the past, including the Great Depression. Including the ones no one, you know, everybody's like, oh, the Great Depression. No one talks about the huge depression of like 1907 and 1909, or the ones in the 1800s that were caused on purpose to install the Federal Reserve, or the recession in the 1970s, or the dot-com. Like, we've had these hard times, and yet people have made fortunes in the middle of the hardest of times. Because success is a choice. Well, so is freedom. And if you want success, the first step is freedom. It is free people to build. It is free people to create. It is people with a free heart, mind, soul, and spirit who believe in tomorrow enough to go through the hard times to build something that doesn't yet exist, rather than just partake of something somebody else built. So whether it is you are trying to just be free, or you want to become like an entrepreneur, it has all starts with freedom. Whatever it is you want to have in your life that you consider success, if it involves building, builders have to believe in tomorrow. So if it's building a homestead, you have to believe in tomorrow. And that's why so many people wash out of homesteading when they're like apocalyptic doomsday preppers. Since they have no faith in tomorrow, what they're doing is reacting in fear instead of building out of empowerment. It's why so many people that try to get rich in the prepper space, maybe they even hit a big splash in the beginning with some fantastic marketing about how the world's going to end, you need their seed vault or whatever the fuck it is. But 17 years later, we have a podcast still running strong, and those people are long gone. I've watched dozens of them come and go and come and go and come and go over the years. Because real building requires faith that there's something to build for tomorrow. And the way you get there is by first becoming individually emancipated, individually free. That's what we're going to talk about today. Before we do, let me just remind you real quick, especially you've got a couple days left to order stuff for Christmas, even if it's late, especially from Amazon. And you can always help me out when you're going to do that. Just start your online shopping where? tspaz.com. That's T-S-P-A-Z, tspaz.com. Today's item of the day is the Olight Arcfield Ultra EDC flashlight. I love this thing, guys. I have one of my own right here. I found out about this product from my friend David. I have to say, and I hate to admit it, because David and I do have some rivalry with finding gear and stuff like that. This is the best EDC flashlight I've ever put my hands on. The brightness is amazing. The multi-feature of it is amazing, where it also has a laser pointer and UV light. Three levels of light. The form factor seems a little bit weird with the kind of, you know, squared off shape, but it carries perfectly because of that. It's got the little clip where you can fit it on the bill of a cap, either above or below. So it's got all of that feature. It's rechargeable. The recharge connection is done with a magnetic charger. There's no holes. There's no place for water, dirt, gunk to get in and ruin your ability to charge. It's absolutely fantastic, and Streamlight guarantees it for life. This is, again, it's not cheap, but it is on sale right now, and it is the best EDC flashlight I've ever touched, let alone owned. And so I recommend it highly, and no matter what you buy, you can always help us out. If you do your online shopping starting at tspaz.com, sorry about the coughing and hoarseness. I'm going to power through this with you guys. For those on the audio only, when you hear a pause, it's probably me taking a sip of my it's like electrolyte mix or something like that to help me get through this. It is Olight. Did I say Streamlight? Because I didn't mean to. I've recommended a lot of Streamlights in my life. It's Olight, this particular model here. All right, so I got that wrong again. I apologize for not being 100% on my game today. But let me try to do the best I can for you in this last live feed of 2025. Let's start off with what is freedom and what does it have to do with a word that I use a lot that freaks people out? Anarchy. You know, how do those two things go together? To me, the hard part about defining freedom is you're trying to define something seen through another's eyes. So we can talk about the conditions that create real freedom, but we actually can't define it because what I'll do with it or what Kevin will do for it or with Michael or Michelle or Second Light or Village 3, I'm just reading people's names here from the live chat, what everyone will do with their freedom is different. And so what freedom looks like to me is not necessarily what it looks like to you. Again, we can define conditions for freedom. We can say something like the ability to do whatever you want up until the point where you use force or coercion to prevent another person from doing what they want. We can say a condition in which all interactions between adults are consensual and absent of coercion, either individually or by a third party like the state. Right? We can do it in a bunch of different ways that would literally be a perfect definition of the conditions of freedom. But some people actually like to live in a place with a lot of rules and a lot of order, like an HOA. So within an anarchy, you certainly have HOAs. They would just have to be privately owned and controlled, right? And that's why I like to use anarchy to just explain freedom, even to someone who's never going to go that far. You know, like if small government libertarian is the best you can do, or you think you can be a small government Republican, that's fine. But the definition of true freedom, whether you think it can be obtained or not that way, right, but it'll never work, doesn't matter. Real freedom would be that Bill's over there, Bill's not doing anything on your property, Bill's not shooting at you, Bill's not trying to kill you, Bill's not taking your stuff, Bill's minding Bill's business on Bill's property, doing Bill's things with Bill's friends. If they happen to be doing something you don't like smoking a plant or, I don't know, wife swapping, because I would never do that, and I don't want to be part of something like that, but it's not my business. That's Bill's business. As long as there's no coercion and, you know, theft or, you know, violence involved in that, nobody being forced to be part of it, it's not my business. That's pure freedom. Again, whether you like it or not, that's pure freedom. But what would you do with it? Because some people would, like, immediately go, oh, my God, this is terrible, and they would form their little HOA-like communities. And they would create all their own self-governance and all their own rules. And the places with the most rules would attract the people who wanted the most rules. And that's what they would do with their freedom. That sounds like, so you're saying freedom can be a bunch of rules? Well, if everybody agrees to them, sure. Sure. Because it's not my place to tell you what to do with your freedom. So that's really how anarchy fits in this discussion. Is that it's not about taking over the world and then setting it free, because it will immediately reassemble itself into systems of control. That's something we're going to talk about a little bit more in a bit. So what is the real goal of anarchy then? I thought the real goal of anarchy was for a bunch of people in black shit to like burn down buildings until there was no government. Well, that would never work, and no one thinks it will. And the people doing that are not anarchists, they're socialists. They're fascists, which is just a flavor of socialism. The anti-fascist anarchists are actually fascists. Anybody with a brain knows this. I mean, anybody with an IQ over 85 that wants to understand that already does, right? The problem in dealing with a lot of people with these discussions, especially leftists, is half of a discussion with a leftist is you trying to explain something to them that they pretend to not understand so that they don't have to debate you, right? If you want to understand what I just said, you can understand what I just said. So what is the point then of anarchy if it's not for everybody all over all at once? If it's not a system to push people into, then what is it? It is, in the words of one of the most despicable, murderous pieces of shit that ever existed, who was criticizing anarchism, by the way, when he said this, the emancipation of the individual. And that person was Joseph Stalin, who, for all of the talk of Marx this and Marx that, the person that actually made Marxism, socialism, communism, label it whatever you want to, into its modern form in practice more than anybody else is Stalin. And when he was discussing the differential between anarchism and socialism, because in the early days of that uprising, they fought side by side because both sides deceived the other. He said that. But again, I want you to understand, he said it as a criticism. He said that the goal of anarchism was the emancipation of the individual, believing only that if we emancipated the individual, could the masses become emancipated. The goal of socialism was first the emancipation of the masses, because only once the masses were free could the individual be liberated. Now, again, this is anybody with an IQ over 80 that wants to understand can see the flaw in that, especially if you're a student of history, of the history of republicanism, not the Republican Party, Republican forms of government, where states are naturally limited because power is corruptible and will be corrupted and will be used for malice and will be used incompetently. That is the reason for that restriction. Because one way or another, it will backfire in time. So the more limits you put, the longer you give the Republic a chance before it slides into despotism. And if you look at the logic and the reasoning of our founders, even those that disagreed with each other in moving forward with a republic as a form of government, that was it. And they were even borrowing at least some of their thoughts from what was known as the Iroquois Nation, or the League of Five Nations, or the Haudenosaunee, right, which were five tribes in the Northeast that had their own agreement. A lot of people like oversell that and say, like, the Founding Fathers got the whole Declaration of it. Shut up. No. But they did certainly observe what was going around and see this philosophy and blend it with Western Republic philosophy. And they knew that if you protected the individual's rights above all things, that there would be a maximum of freedom. Because, you know, as people talk about protecting the right of the minority, what's a smaller minority than one? Remember I said every individual will choose how to use their freedom differently, and therefore we can only define the conditions of freedom, right? We can't actually define what freedom is because it's different for everybody. We can only define the conditions where maximum freedom exists, right? So that's the real goal of anarchy, is emancipation of the individual, which means it's your choice. It means it's your choice. Now, there are limitations. People say, well, I can't just be as free as I want. I want to do all these things. And what I find, and Nicole is here with us from Facebook, not from Facebook. She's at Facebook watching us and commenting from there. I bet she would agree with this wholeheartedly. Most of the time, when a person starts listing all the things they would do, if they had the freedom to do them, if they list 10 things, 9 of them immediately can go, well, you can do all those things. I mean, no one will just give it to you, but, and maybe you'll have to obtain a license, or maybe you'll have to geographically relocate so you don't need one. Like, well, I shouldn't have to have one. I never said you should, but you're saying you can't do the things, but you could do the things. So you're using what are obstacles to do the things is an excuse, as though they are walls. And she's moved to YouTube, but I bet you she'll agree with that most of the things people say that they cannot do because of restrictions are things that could be done if only they would fucking do them instead of make excuses. That wouldn't be easy. and you might have to get you might have to work with what's called the interactive edge in permaculture design as an anarchist. Okay? And the key to doing this right is actually permaculture. That's why I believe that permaculture is an anarcho-science, even though its creator didn't know that's what he was creating, because he had a different definition for anarchism than the actual definition of anarchism. Bill Mollison saw anarchism as complete disorder, but what he designed is actually a perfect representation of anarchism. Because the first thing he did was make sure it could never be centralized, and made sure the universities could never trademark and control the discipline of permaculture. No one would ever be able to control the word. That was like day one, once he realized they had, okay, this is the first thing we have to do to protect it. Keep it out of the hands of the universities and keep it out of the hands of the corporations. They can use it, they can do it, but they cannot own it, they cannot control it. That's alone anarchy. But the real science for an anarchist to understand interactive edge and personal lifestyle design and designing your life the same way we would design a backyard as a permaculture backyard is understanding that all of these things that get in the way of what we say are our freedom are nothing but restrictions on our design. And no matter how many laws you repeal, a mountain will still be there and will still cast shade. And you're either on the side of the mountain that gets the sun or you're not. A river will still run through a piece of land, and that watershed will define what you can and can't do. Your neighbor will own land, even if the government doesn't say anything about it, and your neighbor will have some say over where the property lines, where they get close to each other, over what can happen there and what can't. Deals will be need to be made, or you'll have to accept the fact that I can't make a deal with this person. Like, you see what I'm saying? Like, no matter how much freedom you think you have, if you actually respect the rights of others, you're always going to have restrictions anyway. So all the government restrictions are is another form of restriction on the design, and you as the designer would do the same type of manipulation. Either I can work with this restriction, or since I know what I want to do, I'm not buying that property. Like, I want to start a property, and I want to – my main business, I'm a beekeeper. I'm not for real, but I'm just saying in this scenario, I'm a beekeeper. And I want to do organic bees. That's my goal. Organic bees, organic honey, organic bee products. And there is a 50-acre property. That's lots of property for bees. I'm going to plant all the things, and I'm going to give the bees all the support. And I know there's good surrounding native land for the bees that's like still in grasslands or whatever for the bees to go out and do their thing on. But the land is adjacent to a chemical factory. That makes, you know, not even a chemical, let's say a soda factory. And if I put my bees there, I'm literally going to have different colored honey because they're going to be feeding on the waste from the soda that they throw out, because there's no way to stop the bee from doing that. And if I move there, I have no right to then say to the soda factory, you have to stop doing that. They were doing that before I moved there. So with it in mind, I realized like that's an untenable restriction. So I need to geographically relocate. Or I look at a place and say, I really don't like what's near it or adjacent to it, or restrictions of the overriding government, whether that's an HOA or a town council or a county government. Doesn't matter. Okay? That restriction is what it is. And I can either design around that restriction or that place doesn't work. As soon as we take that approach, all of the excuses that we make are thrown right back at us and go, but what are you going to do about it? Or Nicole's favorite word, but why? Like a little kid. I love Nicole, the way she does that. Well, I can't do this. And she doesn't say, oh, let me tell you how you can. She goes, but why? But why? Is it, well, because they won't let me. But why? Well, I can't do this because, but why? And if you keep asking a person that question long enough, eventually they realize something. The why is you. The why is you. Well, if I had enough money, then I could do this anyway. Well, then the problem is money. It's not the obstacle. You need to be creative either in raising the money or getting around the obstacle or getting away from the obstacle. And that's the whole thing that we're coming at this with today, because we do have that interactive edge. And we've talked about parallel economies and agorism, and I love all that shit. This community itself, there are probably thousands of transactions a month that go on between members of this community on and offline completely, let's call them gray market off the books. Nothing is organized. There's no marketplace because you centralize it, then you become a target. There's people that know each other. There's people that met each other through this community 12 years ago, and both parties no longer listen or join in on what we do actively, but they still know each other and they're still trading over the fence. Okay. But you know what? You're still going to buy products from the grocery store. You're still going to go to Home Depot, Lowe's, or something like it. You're still going to shop on Amazon, hopefully through T-Spaz. You're still going to buy shit through all sorts of centralized marketplaces. You're still going to pay most of your bills one way or another touching the Visa or MasterCard networks. Even a lot of using Bitcoin exclusively, you're still touching that network by the time you pay the bill. You're still going to have a bank account. You're still going to pay your taxes. If you're smart, you're going to design your life to minimize your tax footprint, but you're going to pay taxes. You're going to drive a car on the road. You're going to have a fucking driver's license because you're not going to be an idiot. I'm a sovereign citizen. I made my own out of Mickey Mouse paper. Yeah, and you're going to jail, right? I saw a guy get away with it. That's like this dude I follow, man. He has this like the bell curve graph, and like you have your two things in the middle peak, and it says like 34% on each side. So it's like 68%, right, in the center. And he's standing on the top. He said, me. And there's another stick figure all the way at the other side on 2%. Pointing at, so what about this one? You, right? That's the truth. Like, we are going to live with a foot in both worlds as a modern anarchist, agorist, even just garden variety libertarian. And if we deny that, we're not being serious. We're not being serious. We shouldn't be taken serious as people. Well, we're just going to build parallel economy. Back to Gab with you. Get out of here. No, you're not. That's how long ago do you think somebody came up with that idea? I can remember hearing my uncle say stuff like that, not exactly the same words, but like that in the late 1970s. This is 2025. We've even built online platforms to enable this, and it's still a vector of attack. We are going to live with a foot in both worlds. As anarchists, as libertarians, as people that just believe in freedom, as homesteaders, as Bitcoiners, all of us are going to have to live with a sort of ongoing moving Venn diagram with the rest of the world. That's the edge. Now here's the magic of homestead design, permaculture design. Good design always understands that the edge interface is where the greatest abundance is created. That's where the most explosive growth always happens, is where two edges intersect in that overlay. When you can look at permaculture, very simple. You got a field, you got a forest. Field goes up to the forest. You have a kind of shrub, vining, ground cover, all layer where you come in. And when you go into those woods, if nobody's cut a path yet, you can walk through the field. You can walk through the woods. But the edge is a tangle, a gnarled tangle. Because the edge is going to have abundance, whether we design it there or not. So if we don't design our edge properly, right, you'll have what the forest has where no one's done any design. Brambles and poison ivy. Yeah. Right? And buck laurel. That's what you'll have. You'll come out itchy and covered in scratches. Or you design the edge and cultivate the abundance. And that's what we have to do in all things. Business, our families, and our lives. Like tectonic plates, Kevin says. In a way, it's kind of like tectonic plates creating a mountain. It's another edge. Even in the middle of a lake where there's no structure, you may find an edge. Or if there is structure you can't see, you'll find an edge. I'm a white bass fisherman. I love fishing for white bass. We have certain lakes we fish on for them around here. We'll find these humps. And this is basically a hill under the lake you can't see. Well, that's a sort of an edge. But the fish aren't always on it. But what will happen is eventually you'll end up with wind blowing stuff around and circulating stuff around, and that hump will kind of channel it upwards, and it'll start to build a cloud of plankton. The plankton will bring in bait fish. And then the white bass will relate to the structure because they're relating to the bait fish that are relating to the plankton that are relating to the structure. and all of a sudden you see a boat in the middle of the lake where there is no edge, yanking fish out left and right. You just didn't see the edge. The people that can find the edges and understand how to channel them have a huge advantage in this world. Whether it's a fisherman, an entrepreneur, or someone just seeking freedom in their life. So what are some ways we can be a modern anarchist? Or if you feel better about it, be free in an unfree world. Number one, when we have contracts with other people, we can intentionally write our contracts to exclude the state at least for as long as possible. And this is actually hard to do. One thing you should know about this, if you end up in this situation, it is in your best interest always, if you're going to take this approach and both sides agree to it, if you can, to get the other party to write the contract rather than you drafting the contract. You may not be able to get it done, but you should always try. Why? Because as a principle of common law, which, by the way, there's a whole huge constitutional argument here why the government should always lose when the Constitution can be interpreted in more than one way. Okay? I'll let you make that connection for yourself when I tell you this principle. But a principle of common law is that when there's a contract between two parties, any ambiguity in the contract will benefit the party that did not draft it. So if I draft the contract with Kevin, and there's a clause in the contract that we have an argument over, and I say, I think it means this, I wrote it. And Kevin says, I think it means this, I read it. And when I signed it believing that it meant this, not what you say. If that goes in front of any court of arbiter, whether it's state or a private arbiter, what they're supposed to do by the letter of law, and this often does happen, is look at it and go, would a reasonable person say that this could be interpreted both as Kevin interprets it and as Jack interprets it? The answer to that is a definitive yes, that it should benefit Kevin because I wrote it, and therefore I created the ambiguity, and therefore the benefit should go to the party who agreed to it, not the party that created the ambiguity. Just so you know. And if you, that means if you do have to write the contract, that you need to write the contract to exclude as much ambiguity as possible, which is good anyway. But write your contracts, draft your contracts, come to your agreements, discuss them. And this should happen especially, but it's friends. You better get a contract. Nothing destroys a friendship like a business deal gone south where both parties believe they're right. You should always be able to get out a contract and open it up and look at it and say, oh, that's what it says there. Because I've had times where I believed I was right. Contractor, for instance, you know, what they're supposed to do. I pull out and go, shit, I guess I'm wrong. And then I might try to negotiate for some concession out of goodwill. But I understand that in the end, I'm bound by the contract. I would expect it to go the other way. So that's one reason they're important. But what most people do in a contract dispute is straight to court, either small claims or regular court. You'll find big corporations avoid that at all costs. They do what I'm telling you to do at a small level. You agree to an independently selected, and both people agree on, non-binding arbiter who will listen to the case and then give you a recommendation, which neither side is required to follow. But it might also go with, if you keep going, guys, this is probably how it's going to come down anyway. Then you go to binding private arbitration. And only if the binding arbitrator finds in a way that the other party says, I ain't doing it anyway, you can't make me, then would you go to the state for enforcement. And at that point, it's not even a case. The contract was spelled out perfectly. As long as the arbiter was legitimate, and there are legitimate private arbiters, then it's going to be very difficult to get that turned over. You signed the contract, you agreed to it, you did it, you went through arbitration, you lost. And that's why a lot less stuff ends up in the court system than would otherwise end up there. So that's one thing you can do. Next is develop the ability to detect logical fallacies in yourself and others. You should know all the logical fallacies. And you can go to a website called Logically Fallacious. And you can read all the logical fallacies. Moving the goalposts, right? You know, false equivalence. Like, the world of social media is the world of false logical fallacy. Almost every argument itself is a fallacy. Of course, when you know there also is something called the fallacy, you know, that doesn't mean it's necessarily wrong. It just means the argument's poor. What I mean is, I could do a red herring, but I could also be right. That's a fallacy. You can't say that the other party's wrong just because what they said was based on a fallacy. You point it out, you can require more of their argument, but if you actually want to prove your case, you need to make your case the same way. You can't use the fallacy to disprove a fallacy is wrong, because a fallacy might be right even though it's a fallacy. But if you at least realize that the person speaking or writing on your TV, on your phone, on your computer screen is using a fallacy to make an argument, even when you agree with their point, you may go, wait a minute, that's a weak argument. If I'm going to believe a thing, I'm going to know why I believe what I believe. And a fallacy is not a good enough reason for that. Not all analogies are fallacies, but many fallacies are analogies. This is another way to look at this, right? So just take the approach of, every time somebody says anything that is trying to convince you of anything, is the person using a fallacy to make the argument? And if you want to believe it, you're more susceptible to the fallacy. Yeah, Kevin, straw man arguments are real, very common, bro. The straw man fallacy. Like, I really think that, like, one of the best things we could do, of course, the education system will never do this, by the way. There should be a required, I don't say a course, a required block in high school on fallacies. Like, kids should be tested on fallacies probably more than algebra. The fallacy, understanding fallacy, how to identify, dissect, and eliminate fallacy in making a logical argument would be something used way more than algebra by 99% of people. Because again, 70% of the people are here, and you're going to point to 2% over here and go, what about this? I don't have time for what about this. Another fallacy, by the way. That's called cherry picking. Right. We should have a child by the time, I would say 10th grade is the latest we should wait. There should be a block of instruction. Here's all the common logical fallacies and examples of them. And a test should be, here's a logical fallacy. Explain the fallacy and give an example. And they should be able to do it with all of them. If they can't do it with all of them, it's like a no-go test in the military. It's not A or B. Like, that block is required for whatever subject it goes in. History, I don't know, right? English, whatever. Whatever subject you attach it to. No matter what your grade is, to graduate that year and go, you have to get 100%. You can take the test as many times as you want. So if we decide 20 logical fallacies is enough for this block, and they get 10 right, then the next test is only the other 10. Just that they might not remember it all. They're not going to remember most of what they learned in school anyway. But what that would do, well, here's why it won't happen. Here's what it would do. It would destroy the ability of the education system to control the mind of the student. It would destroy the ability of the scientific and academic industry to control the mind of America. It would destroy the ability of the media to control the minds of America and Western civilization. So that's why they won't do it. But that's why you should do it, and why you should teach it to your kids. I also think another thing you can do that really will make you feel more free than you can imagine is find a nonprofit that you truly believe in what they do. And it's probably the case that you need a nonprofit that does not advertise on television. Right? Not one of these big ones. Something that's kind of local to you that you can go look and see what they do. You can see the people that are employed and the people that are volunteers. You can see the work that they do, and you can see where it goes. And if they're a good nonprofit, they probably have a newsletter you can get once a month or something. It tells you all the stuff they did. But what's even more powerful is go visit the place. Go to where they do this, like if they do like food distribution, go to where they, because what will happen, my wife took my grandkids to do this. great big warehouse. They bring all this food in. It all gets repackaged into like care boxes and get distributed. And they went and did that. Well, they also go to, like, when they deliver it or when they hand it out, take pictures. Take pictures. Put it in a folder on your computer, your phone, whatever. Once a month, donate to that charity. You say you care? You say, well, our tax dollars could do so much work. They put something in the game. I'll give us $20. Something. Donate to that. But every time you cut that check or initiate that payment, like online or whatever, open that folder and look at those pictures where you actually were and you actually saw what it was doing. It will change you. And notice I didn't tell you how much or who to or what mission. No, I don't care. Find a nonprofit with a mission you believe in, doing things that you think are important. Go see it, witness it firsthand. And once you decide they're worth some of your time, talent, and treasure, back them. And every time, like even if you have it on auto draft, have an alert. And whenever that alert comes up, you look at those pictures. Not fake pictures, like the little sick kid they send you in the mail. And that they've been sending that same kid's picture out for like 10 years. He's 20 now. No, real pictures where you really went and you really saw what was really going on. It changes you for the better. It makes you realize how much power you actually have. You're choosing who and what and when and how much to support. No one's making you do it. It's one of the most liberating things, and it's also one of the things that will move more people toward liberty than you could imagine without using the word liberty. You can go to the most liberal, effed up, box-headed, believe everything on TV, TDS-having social justice warriors you can find. And if you give them that chance, they actually take the challenge because, well, I'll just send it to BLM or whatever. Did you go see what, where they do the thing and where the thing hits the road? No, you need to find one where that happens. And even if they do it with something you would never touch with a 10-foot pole, because I saw some crazy shit in Seattle, but it was self-organized, so fine. This is what it says. Wait a minute. I found a problem, and I checked a bunch of places that said they had a solution. And I didn't want to give those people my money because they didn't have a solution. They weren't doing things the way I thought was right. And then I found one, and then I funded it, and no one got in my way. And then I told my friend, and they funded it too. And now we have a little ownership stake in this thing that does the thing we say needs to be done. But we didn't go to the town council or the federal government. They might not even think of it that way. But the reality is, when a person acts, it changes how they think. You can change your thinking to change your action, but you can also change your action to change your thinking. It goes both ways. Make your own alcohol. And that's just an example. Avoid taxes is what I'm really saying. Sin taxes, any taxes. Like, what can you do to change calculus? There's this, I love this video, or not video, meme, right? It's meme. And it's like the soy boy guy with his hands all up, right? And he's looking at this stack of bottles, you know, that have big price tags on them. And he's like, oh my God, moonshine. And there's like a Chad dude with a cap on in the bottom frame. And he's got his little still. And he says, ain't shine if you're paying taxes. That's what makes a moonshine. It ain't how it's made. It ain't where it's made. Right? There's good and bad distillate. But what makes it moonshine in the first place is it's getting around the revenuers. It's getting around the government. Now, you don't have to be a illegal moonshiner to use this. If you drink beer, you can make wine, you can make mead. Those are all legal. And you might be making some fuel you accidentally drink. I don't know anything about that. I don't smoke. I don't think you should, but I don't understand why anybody, especially lives in the South. If you smoke, why aren't you growing your own tobacco? Complete control. No. I mean, it's poison, but no added poisons. No prohibition against it. Or at least, like, I know people that smoke the save a fortune because they buy a certain type of pipe tobacco that's actually, like, the same shit that's in Marlboro's, and they buy little tubes of paper and they have a machine that stuffs them. I would never do that, but do you get what I'm saying? Find ways around the things used to funnel your money to causes you don't like. Those are just examples. Not all of them are gray market. Not all of them are black market. Some of them are just structure. You know, running a business is the masterstroke for that. Just change the flow of your money. So you've already found something to support you believe in. So find ways to stop sending money to things you don't believe in. But here's the thing. Nobody goes, no, you only gave 20 bucks. That doesn't do anything. When you decide I'm going to donate 20 bucks a week or 20 bucks a month to something that feeds kids, for instance. They say, well, that's every little bit matters. But when you choke $20 off from the state, going to do something you find reprehensible, well, that doesn't matter. Really? How? How? How doesn't it matter exactly? Maybe it doesn't matter to you, but it matters to me. It's my fucking money, right? Emancipation of the individual. Your emancipation's your business. You don't worry about my emancipation. And anything I can do, especially legally, to change the flow of money from things I don't want to things I do want, even money I don't keep, especially money I don't keep, I'm going to do that. Next, avoid using the state's money as your primary economic battery. And here's what I mean by that. As I said, we have this interactive edge. And purist, asshole, anarchist, this is why I call them assholes. It's not because their ideas aren't good. It's because their ideas are bullshit. Like, their ideas are ideologically great, but practically bullshit. They're not going to happen. So when they start saying Bitcoin is for spending and you shouldn't save it or whatever dumb shit they come up with, like to say not save money or, you know, do all your business. No, you're not going to do all your business in Bitcoin. You're not. You might even only hold, sell, earn, and spend Bitcoin. It's still going into dollars. It's going to dollars instantly. So I'm not talking about hold Bitcoin here. It doesn't even have to be Bitcoin. The way we win this game is we understand how the game is rigged. Everybody knows that the game is rigged, but most people don't know how. But the primary way the game is rigged as there is a wealth extraction mechanism in the currency itself. You've been taught that word is inflation, right? Inflation. Well, the funny thing is all the investment gurus and all actually give you the answer. They just stay limited in scope as to what they mean. So don't hold an inflationary asset long term. That's why they tell you when you invest in your retirement, don't hold stocks, ETFs, and mutual funds, and whatever else they sell you to buy. You know, municipal bond funds or some bullshit. I'm not even saying those things are bad. Bonds, though, are just denominated dollars in a debt. It's another form of the same thing. But equities, actually an ownership stake in a company that's profitable, it might be denominated in dollars, but the value is in the asset itself. A property, a real asset. Real estate. It might be denominated in dollars, but its value is in the asset itself. They ain't making any more dirt, is what my uncle Stefan used to say. My uncle Stefan was a guy that my dad told me, Jack, your uncle Stefan has been married and divorced 3 times. He's now living alone in his 70s. And he said he'll never get married again. He clearly doesn't know what he's doing with women. So if he gives you advice on women, he said, maybe dating might be all right, but when it comes to like relationship long-term, don't take his advice. He has a track record of consistent failure with women. However, we live in a state with alimony, and so does he. He's a blue-collar millionaire in spite of having 3 ex-wives. So if he gives you advice about money, take it. And one of Uncle Stefan's, my great Uncle Stefan, by the way, it's my grandfather's brother. One of his great pieces of advice was always, they ain't making any more dirt. Now, he didn't mean like we can make compost. That's kind of dirt. He didn't mean that. He meant land. I ain't making any more dirt. So that's something you can invest in because it's finite in quantity. And it goes up in value over time or nothing else. It holds its value. Now, I don't know how much Uncle Stephan really knew about inflation. Because I'm going back to the 80s, and the modern dollar was only about 10 years old at the time. But the advice is just as good today as it was back then. So whether it's Bitcoin or gold or tools or real estate, what we need is an economic battery that can be extracted and set apart from their method of extraction. Because I'm going to tell you, I can't tell you everything that's going to happen next year. But I guarantee you one thing is going to happen. Printer go burr, like a freaking, you know, warthog burr out of the printer. They're bringing all the warthogs, right? All the A-10s, except instead of shooting, you know, Gatling guns, they're going to be firing dollars at the economy next year. And it's going to set off an economic boom. What always comes after the boom, right? When you have a great party, when it's 1:30 in the morning, you're like, I should go home. And your friend goes, oh, man, one more drink. You're like, woohoo, I can't do it loud because my voice is going out, right? What comes the next morning every single time? Whenever there's a big party, if you go all in on the party, you partake on the hangover. So we know that's coming. We've seen it before. We'll see it again. Very simple pattern. So we need to make sure that we're taking at least some of our wealth and we're moving out of that place. Dollars are for short-term transactional purposes. And at the current time, I mean, they're going to want my anarchist card now, whoever they are. Fuck them, by the way, for saying this. But at the current time, the most useful tool for short-term economic transactions in the world is the United States dollar. I'm not praising it. I'm pointing to a limitation because all the world's currencies are in the same casino. And for now, we're the house. So we have the chip maker. We can print more chips whenever we want. We'll devalue the other chips. We don't care. I want you to think about it this way. You're playing roulette at a casino. And you're playing pretty conservatively, so you get a big stack of chips, and you're only, you know, maybe betting $20 a spin. Maybe you're spreading it apart. You think you got a system. And you're doing okay. You lose a little, you gain a little, you lose. At least you're drinking on the house, right? Because a pretty girl comes around, you flip her a chip once in a while, and she brings you your well drinks or whatever. The night ends. You count up your chips, yeah? If some bitch you broke even, you have the same amount of money you started with in chips. Okay. Well, I got to hang out at the table, talk to some cool people, have a pretty girl bring me drinks. I'll just cash out. I walk out whole. You go up to the counter and you thought you had, I don't know, you had $1,000. They give you $750. And you say, wait. Is there some kind of fee here or some shit? And they go, no, zero fees. We just made a lot more chips while you were playing the game. That is the fucking dollar. While you're busting your ass and risking everything and stacking dollars, the house is printing more dollars and devaluing the stack while you make it. Oh, yeah, you saved $50,000. That's great. But it'll only buy you what $40,000 would have bought you when you started. But don't worry, it's okay. It's the price we pay to live in a civilized society. Stack assets. And life will be, in the words of one of our commenters here, beautiful. Life is beautiful. This isn't life. This is a game. You have to extract yourself from the game as much as possible. But where you play the game, where the edge interacts, you have to play to fucking win. Start a business. That is the number one thing you can do. And on that note, I have no idea if this is going to be true or not, but we launched the AI course today. And I expected it to sell out really super fast, like it has in the past. But I also knew doing it this week was a risk. This is Santa week. Lots of people on airplanes, shopping, hungover, sleeping at their parents' house, sleeping at their kids' house, whatever. And we didn't sell out yet. Right now, this minute, there are 4 seats in stock for the AI course. You want to start a business and you're not sure where to start? Come up with a concept. Join this course today. And have your concept ready to go on January the 5th when the course actually starts. And make 2026 your year to start a business. I am going to drop a link into the chat, but I don't know how well that's going to work for anybody. I don't know if it'll actually be clickable. I'll put it up on the screen. But I'll also tell you, if you are listening to this, watching it, whatever, you can go to the Survival Podcast right now. You can find a post about those remaining couple seats. Click on a link there, and you can get to this page. And you can take the 8-week course for $350. In the last round, we had plenty of people say, after 2 weeks, I got my money out of this course. It's an 8-week course. But start a business. The business changes everything once you make it successful. First, I want you to understand something. I want you to really understand what I'm about to say. If anybody, and I mean if anybody, tells you that you should have a business that loses money just for tax purposes, run the fuck away from that person. Businesses need to be built to be profitable. We can still end up with a tax loss on a business that's profitable. But what we often end up doing is, even with a side hustle business, yes, my total gross income went up. I kept my job. I started a side hustle. I'm not ready to transition over yet. And so my business, you know, had $50,000 in revenue and $20,000 in profit. So now if I have $100,000 income from my employment, I went from $100,000 to $120,000. I'm paying tax on more money. No, I'm not. I promise you, if your CPA is worth the weight of the clothes they wear in silver, and they better be. No, you're not. You might be paying more in than you would have otherwise. But you keep more. Because that $30,000 worth of loss that went down to $20,000, not all of it's real. I mean, all of it's real. Let me explain what I'm saying. It's all real. It's all legal. It's all the code. And all, you better be able to check those 3 boxes. But you can't. And there's a litany of shit that opens up. It's what I've said for years. The tax code is, think of it as a book this thick. You know, 2.5 foot thick. About 2 inches of that 3 foot is what you have to do. The rest is how you get out of doing it. Because the people that wrote it, wrote it for themselves, not for you. The people that wrote it, are they A, business owners, or B, employees? Well, the Congress wrote it. You don't know anything. Congress does not write bills. Companies write bills. They give them to lobbyists who pay congressmen to put their names on them. When you hear a congressman, my bill that I authored. No, you didn't write it. You didn't write it. The only people that write bills in Congress are people like Rand Paul. They write these little short bills that no one votes on. They're honest. They're good men, but that's not going anywhere. The 1,175-page bill that goes to vote, you think your congressman wrote that? Are you that stupid? Do you think they've ever worked that hard on anything in their life other than stealing from people? No. That was written by a freaking office full of retards who are actually not retarded at what they do what they're told, who write things. It's written by lawyers who do things to benefit the people pushing them. Okay? And the people that manipulated and drafted the code, the tax code that we pay income tax on, they're all business owners. All of them. No employees made the decision. Employees wrote it, but they didn't make the decision about what to write and in what angle. So that means the entire system was and always shall be written to the benefit of the business owner. So if you stay in the quadrant of the employee, you will never gain the benefits of the business owner. And that is that's why you want a profitable business. Not so you can create a false tax deduction, but so you can move as much income as possible into the expense category. And there's tons of ways to do that. The advantages are such that you will not understand them until you experience them. So start a business. It also changes everything about how you think. The business owner, the real business owner, not the person that joined Amway because their friend told them to, like somebody that actually creates something. There's a sea change in the mind that happens. Boom. And that's the person that every problem you see is an opportunity. Every problem, well, how can we fix that? And what is the structure by which fixing that or even a piece of that could be profitable for somebody? And 90% of the time, you'll see a solution and be like, that's not my business. That's not the business I'm in. That's not what I want to do. But you'll look at it that way. This is why it's hard for the big government people to understand when we say private industry can do a better job. Because when they think of private industry, they're thinking about the whole system we just talked about, the lobbyist that pays the politician to do what the lobbyist wants the politician to do because the person paying the lobbyist wants that done. But because they don't understand logical fallacy, they think that changing the person being paid at the end of the chain will change the results. It's asinine. So when they see a problem, they say, this shouldn't happen. This is wrong. I am outraged. Because I'm outraged and my feelings are important because I was told I was special in school, somebody should fix it because I shouldn't be outraged. And since I don't know how to fix it, then I want the government to fix it. And since the government's not fixing it, if we replace the people that are there now with somebody else, they'll do the thing. Because clearly if I'm outraged, that's what should happen. The minute you actually teach people how to see problems as opportunities, they realize it's impossible for government to fix the problem. It's impossible. Government has never fixed a problem. Now, there's illusions of that where you say, well, what about this or what about that? So when government ceases to do something or places a restriction upon itself so it can no longer do something and the problem is mitigated or gets better or goes away, the government didn't fix the problem. They stopped causing it. That would be like, I'm going around lighting houses on fire. And then I say, hey, guys, give me some money and I'll stop the problem. And you give me the money and I'm actually an honest crook and I stop lighting fires and go, see, there's no more fires now. That's the government fixing a problem. Whatever, it was the Civil Rights Act. Okay, why was that necessary? Was it because private companies were preventing certain people from voting and things like that? No. It's because governments were enacting policies that made that either possible or actually was the cause of it. So it was restriction upon government. Government's never fixed anything. And even when it gets to a solution, it's never what it could have been. You want a project to be too expensive and have poor results in the end, get government involved. Do you know how many things the private industry tries to fix the government gets in the way of? And you know who encourages that? Bigger business. See, my biggest concern as a business owner should be, how do I do the best job possible for my customer? But in America today and the world as a whole, once you get past a certain level, that stops being your concern. How do I suppress my competition? Once I start owning like 20% or more of the market, the only real way to grow now is to take the market, which is taking from my competitors and preventing entry. So when we get somebody to actually build something from the ground up, they are going to move in the right direction, even if not as far as we think they should, because that's called freedom. I would also say try to form a group that does something positive for the world. Not necessarily a nonprofit. It could be. I already talked about supporting one. But even if you just had a group of people that met like in your neighborhood once a week, looked around your neighborhood and said, man, Bill's yard looks pretty bad. I remember walking over to Bill's house and said, hey, Bill, what's up? He's like, oh, I don't know. What are you guys doing here? Oh, we noticed your yard looks a little rough. Well, yeah, I mean, you know what? We want to take care of it for you today. No, no, you don't have to. We got it. Not, hey, we're here to bitch. Not here, we're going to call the department and making you sad. Like, especially if Bill is, like, that's the thing, because you live there, you know that Bill's yard is usually pretty nice. Something's going on. You don't even need to know what it is. All you know is Bill's a good dude. He could be getting ready to go through a divorce. He could have just lost his job and he's killing himself trying to find a new job. One of his kids could be sick. Maybe he'll tell you. Maybe he won't. Maybe you could do more. Maybe you can't. But you know what you could do? Four dudes and a lawnmower, a leaf blower, and a weed eater. And in what? 30 minutes? The average, you know, with that many guys, the average suburban yard is perfect. Hey, man, if you need anything else, let us know. When things are better and you want to help out, this is where we meet once a week. We kind of meet and we walk. Like, I'm not saying to do that. I'm saying that's how easy that could be. It could be a group that, you know, I don't know. You come up with it. You get freedom. That's the hard part about freedom. Do what you want with it. I remember when I first discovered music torrents and something called LimeWire in the 90s. Right? Remember LimeWire? Right? And I realized what it did. And I'm like, holy shit, I can get any song I want, but I can also get music that, like, you can't get anywhere else. Like, live recordings. You know, like, two people collaborating that there is no commercial recording of that collaboration. Any song from any era. And I remember I went to my wife and said, well, what do you want me to get? She said, I don't know. If I gave her five songs and said, which ones do you want? She'd be like, all five of them or those three instantly. But when presented with complete freedom, you have anything you want. I don't know. When, like, those of you that are old enough to remember a world without internet and a world with internet, a lot of things that we became, like, we can have anything we want. I don't know what I want. It was real easy, right, if you grew up in the 70s. Thursday evening, Wednesday evening, Sunday evening. TV, you're going to watch NBC, ABC, CBS, PBS, or maybe the early version of Paramount. Maybe. Maybe if your antenna turned the right way, you could get a fifth channel. Right? Maybe you could get some Chinese movies with a little nipple in them when you were a kid on the weekends. Right? But it was easy to pick what to watch. When you first got cable, at first, you find a couple of things like MTV or whatever. But at some point, the reality sets in, like, there's 100 channels. And what, there's actually a song and there's nothing on. There's 100 channels and there's nothing on. I can't remember the song exactly. It might even have been there's 200 channels and there's nothing on. Some song came out in the 80s, 90s, somewhere in that range. Well, the same shit you used to pick from was still there. And you always found something. But when they added to it and expanded your choice and gave you freedom, you weren't sure you want. So back to what I was saying earlier about designing within the limitations, sometimes we need to look at the limitations society places upon us as a gift. Not because they're good, but because the eloquence of our design can be directly attributed to our creativity, our pattern recognition, and the restrictions we design around. So form a group that does positive things and help other people do that in some way. Next, be at least a basic prepper, you know, and step up when the state falls down. You should be able to take care of your home if the power goes out, minimum, right? And if you can't go to the store for a couple weeks. And you should be able to give a little bit of help to at least your two adjacent neighbors, and you should do it. And if they don't need your help because they're squared away, then the three of you should go a couple more houses out. It's your tremendous impact. It's your tremendous impact when you help your neighbors in those situations like that. 57 channels and they ain't nothing on. I wonder if that's the song. I don't remember it being 57, but I thought it was like 100 or 199 or 200 channels, but I'll take your word for it, Pack Rat. But be a basic prepper and grow your own food. I don't care if it's a little bit. I don't care if it's an herb garden. I don't care if it's four pots on your patio that's like basil, oregano, chives, thyme, you know, like that kind of stuff. Anything. Because it's not just that it's better quality. It's not just that it's hyper-local. It's not just that it's good for you emotionally and spiritually, right? It changes your mindset. We live in a world where we believe that everything comes from somewhere else, that everything is outside of us. What is more powerful? Oh, he says it's Springsteen's Human Touch album from 92, 57 channels and nothing on. I'm going to put that up right now, Nicole, and we'll say it again at the end. Nicole has five of Jack's bourbon-cooled coffees left before we're sold out. Do with that information as you will. I'll leave that up there for her while I talk. But grow some of your own food. Because what's more powerful than the ability to co-create with life itself? Do you understand? That's what growing a garden is. When we take a corn seed and we put it in the ground and we nurture it, and it grows into a corn plant and it makes two or three or four, depending on the variety, 4 ears of corn from one seed. We did not create life. That would be arrogance. Whether would you believe in God, a creative spark, whatever it is, that life force itself, life begets life. But we channel the form in which that life manifests. That makes us co-creators. Instead of a dried out ear of corn that was thrown around the ground to rot and maybe grew a few things here, maybe a few plants, maybe 100, maybe 90% of those kernels begat a huge plant and whole ears of corn. Without our touch, without our guidance, without our working with nature and working with our own design, that doesn't happen. And a plant like corn, the reason I bring it up, even though I'm not a huge corn fan, it is a plant made by the hand of man. There is nowhere we have wild stands of corn. We have wild stands of something called seoente, which we believe to be the mother plant that was developed in all the world's corns in what we call the New World. But corn as we know it is a creation of man himself. We coexist because of the way corn is designed, because of the way it works. It doesn't reseed well. It rots, it gets eaten, a little bit of it may grow here and there, but it can't self-sustain. Think of how many things we grow, we cultivate, that exist in nature on their own and go wild and go feral and maybe revert some on genetics, but they progenerate. Corn doesn't do that. So when I say that we co-create life, I'm not being hyperbolic. I'm being dead serious. And there's nothing more powerful than that. It also teaches you don't always have to depend on others for everything. Self-educate constantly and follow your passions. I hate that people are out there, successful people in the world of business, telling people, don't follow your passion in business. That's asinine. It's asinine because, first of all, those people are following their passions. And they'll say they're not. I saw a market need and I filled it. You know what their passion is? Making money. That's what their passion is. I had Patrick Seaman on earlier this year, who was the first official employee of Broadcast.com under Mark Cuban. And so I have a background with him and Mark both. And Mark Cuban has very frequently said, you know, modern billionaire Mark Cuban, not the Mark Cuban I knew, right? That was worth a few hundred thousand, not 4 billion, right? He says that, hey, don't follow your passion. That's nonsense on Shark Tank, but it was nice theatrics. He only built Broadcast. His impetus for it was he's passionate for basketball and he wanted to be able to listen to basketball games from other sides of the country on the radio, and he couldn't do it. That was where the idea came from. And what was one of the first things he did once he became a billionaire? He went out and bought the Dallas Mavericks. Shut up, Mark. Follow your passion, because there is a way to overlay your passion if you're an entrepreneur with entrepreneurship. There's a way to involve both sides. But it's even more important when it comes to learning. The things you are passionate about, no one can prevent you from learning about them. You want to become brilliant at a variety of things. Find a variety of things you have a passion for. And then realize you have the freedom that we do today of unlimited access to information about them. And nothing will stop you from learning about them. The person who did terrible in grade school might actually be a genius. They just weren't passionate about what people were pushing at them. I mean, I believe we can learn to read, write, do math, and about history from any angle. We are in a time and place where the education of our children should be customized to the individual versus to the masses. We don't need to train people to show up, punch a clock, and work on a line, and punch a clock at the end of the day and come back every day anymore. We certainly don't need 13 years to get that done for the people that still need to do it that way. If you turn, you know, this is a thing that we learned when we started homeschooling our grandkids. We were pretty like, I don't know, can we really do this? And Sue LaPrise said to my wife, Dorothy, relax. You will never force a child to learn a thing that they have decided they do not want to learn. And you will never prevent a child from learning something that they have decided they want to learn. And no teacher in any school system anywhere can do that either. This is what I've added to it. So your job as a teacher for the things that need to be learned is to explain to the child or explain to the learner why they should care. And because you'll need it someday is not an answer. But in your own life, be a lifelong learner of things you're passionate about. Teach your children how to self-educate. Teach your children the trivium, grammar, rhetoric, and logic. But why do I need to know how to write these things with the right tense and all? So because if you can write, you can also read. And if you can write, you can convey. And if you can read, you can gather. The way I explained it to my granddaughter when she was having some trouble with reading, it wasn't really bad, but it was a little bit hard and she didn't really care. I told her reading was a superpower. It's a superpower. You can know anything and nobody can stop you from learning about it. You can travel with books to anywhere in the world and experience what it's like to be there and no one can stop you. Anything you want to find out, you can find out. And your older brother, Braylon, he's a really good reader. He can know all the things. And you can only know the things that we tell you for right now. Since you can't read really good, you can't read the things. And even things like finding a video with somebody speaking it to you, you can't figure out what to look for to find it. Your brother has a superpower. Your grandpa does. Your grandma does. Your mom and dad do. Don't you want that superpower too? Or do you want us to be able to find all that information out? Do you want us to be the ones that can know whatever it is we want to know? And then you have to depend on us to tell you what it is? Or do you want that superpower for yourself? And my wife had been fighting this battle, the good fight, man. She comes right, took her in the other room to talk about it. She comes running out. Grandpa, I want to learn how to read. He goes, how did you do that? I'm like, don't mess it up. I'll explain it later. Right? I'll explain it later. True story, guys. That is the job of a teacher. To motivate the student to want to learn and get the fuck out of the way. Teach your kids about that. That's how you teach grammar. You have to be able to read and you have to be able to write so that you can know. Not so you can learn, so you can know. So much know is a much more powerful word than learn. Right? Rhetoric, so you can explain it to other people. so that when you have an idea, you have enough ability to convey that through the spoken or written word yourself so that they can know what you know. Very powerful. And logic, very simple. You will never know all the things. You can know anything you want, but you can't know everything. And there will be times when you will get to a point where you're trying to figure something out and there's no immediate answer. Logic is the ability to take what you can find out, what you already know, and what you've seen before, put it together to make your best guess going forward. Because some things we can't know until we try. Did anybody ever tell you that when you were a kid in school? Might you have been a different student if it was explained to you that way? Am I a super genius? Come on, guys. Redneck hippie duck farmer. If I can figure this out, the people that move you around like pieces on a chessboard, they know what I'm saying is true. They just don't benefit from it. So you do it for yourself, and you do it for your kids. And then freedom is a fucking byproduct of your life. Think about it that way. It's like I teach with business. You do all the right things and money takes care of itself. With lifestyle design, you do all the right things and freedom takes care of itself. You will immediately see a way around every restriction put in front of you. Sometimes it might not be a comfortable way around, but either you really want it or you're just talking. Last, and I shouldn't have to say this, but I have to, trust nothing the state, the media, industry, basically any source says. Trust nothing. It doesn't mean it's a lie. It means you cannot trust it. You must verify everything before you make decisions based on it. If it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. If it really feeds your emotion at the moment, like you're really mad about X, and it's proof that X is bad, it's probably not, even if X is bad, the thing you're being fed is probably not 100% true. And when you make an argument with it on somebody that says, well, actually X is good, even if you're right, you're going to look stupid. And then you're going to get frustrated and you're going to call them an idiot because you can't actually defend the position you took and now you feel compelled to defend the position you took. When I hear anything, my first initial response when it comes from TV, internet, whatever, if it in any way sparks something, is it's probably bullshit in there. Even if the overriding claim is true, it's probably bullshit in there, right? And this is why I don't get disappointed. So many people disappointed. I can't believe that they released the Epstein files and entire pages are redacted. Okay. Guess why I'm not disappointed in that? You're only disappointed when you expect something you don't get. You're never getting the answer to that question. You're never getting the answer to that question. Oh, my throat is about gone, guys. So I'll just leave it at that. Trust nothing that the government says. Trust nothing the news say. Trust nothing that comes out of academia. Take it as a starting point, if it's important enough to have an impact on your life, and research it. But if it's not going to have an impact on your life, discard it. Discard it. Let's say you're driving a truck across a desert, and you only have so much gas and water and things like that. And as you're driving along, you pick things up that you find you want to keep when you get to the other side. But the more weight in your truck, the less fuel efficient your truck becomes. Are you going to put anything in the truck that has any weight at all that's not beneficial to you? Are you going to put gravel in there? No. You get gravel anywhere, right? Why would you carry excess weight that would delay or impede your journey of something that doesn't matter to you, that you're not going to care about when you get to the other side? How much do you carry that weight emotionally, spiritually? right? How much of what you carry is propaganda designed to weigh you down? And you willingly put it on. You get no benefit from it. So that needs to be your base litmus test. There's a claim. Do I give a fuck? If this is true or untrue, will it change my life one way or the other? Will I actually make a decision because it's true or untrue? The answer is no. Fuck it. Throw it away. It has no benefit to you whatsoever. If the answer is yes, then you better fully vet it before you throw it in the back of the truck and keep it. Because if it doesn't vet out, it's just another useless rock weighing you down, reducing your miles per gallon and your likelihood of getting to the place you're trying to get to. That's about all I got in me, guys. End of the year, and the man, the voice is about completely worn out. I've got a couple things here that I starred, but I think there's only one other than Nicole. Again, Nicole has a little bit of Jack's Bourbon cooled coffee left, and you can find that at hollowroast.com. And then Plumber Mickey says, as long as Bill's sanitation doesn't become my water supply, he can do whatever he wants upstream. Yeah, I understand what he's saying. Basically, yeah, do whatever you want as long as you don't pollute my water. That's a very simple way to live. Guys, I am going to go ahead and wrap up. I want to, again, thank you for the full year. I really appreciate all of you. I'd like to give you another 10 minutes right now. Some other things I want to say. My voice is gone. I'm lucky that I had enough recovery from this one to be able to come on today and do what I did for you. Tomorrow, an episode will go out that will be its 17th time that it's gone out since I first did it. An episode that I did off of 1 3x5 index card written on both sides, the console of my Volkswagen Jetta when I started. My first year I did the show, first year and a half, all in my car on my way to my office. And it's called The Survivalist View of Christmas. And it dovetails really nicely into the Thanksgiving special that's also been done now 17 times. I don't care if you've heard that episode before. I want to encourage you tomorrow when it comes out to listen to it. And then to look around at the world we have today and think about how much has changed since the first time I put that episode out. It's only about 20 minutes long, but it tells the story of how Christmas became Christmas in America. And it doesn't take from anything from the religious side of things. In fact, some of that is included. But when I say how Christmas became what it is in America, I don't just mean the religious part. I mean that plus all the things. The Christmas trees, the presents, the going to places, everybody going to grandma's or everybody going to Uncle Bill's or what have you, the exchanging of gifts, not just the things themselves, but the form of the things, Christmas dinner. It's probably, if you've never heard it before, it's not what you think it is. And it wasn't as universal as it is today. And if not for a storybook, a lot of the traditions that we think of as being very, very old, that are only really a couple hundred years old, wouldn't even be a thing. You'll find out why in some places, Christmas was banned. It was considered a rally, ruckus-oriented, heathen holiday. Yes, that Christmas. You'll find out how things that we do in this country became codified. You'll find out a story of Christmas you've probably never heard before. And even if you have heard it before, listen to it again and share it with your family. There's also a beautiful rendition of O Holy Night at the end of that episode. And on my channel on YouTube, there's a like picture montage video of that same version of that song. If not the episode, share that video with others. This is the most beautiful time of year as far as I am concerned. And yes, Pack Rat, banned in America even. Not all of America, but parts of America. Yeah, it was banned. But I think what we have in Christmas is too powerful. Like the beard. It's too powerful for it ever to be stopped or suppressed. But the way we keep it that way, we keep telling the story. With that, guys, I wish you well. I'll catch you in 2026.
They said you should have a house the American way. Dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.